Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And Southside Broadcasting. Podbean.com.
So the term living history is something which is often bandied about, but I think it's fair to say that also employing the cliche end of an era is very much upon us with the sad demise of the Duke of Edinburgh. Before we actually hear from Richard Fitzwilliams, the regular royal correspondent, of course, for Siren Radio and more, we're delighted to actually welcome Sebastian Mann, Rebecca Bond, Yaz de Graaf and Robin Pierce to the production. Rebecca, if I could turn to your good self, obviously as part of the current generation, in many ways. What are your thoughts with respect to your own feelings about the Duke of Edinburgh?
I think it's a sad loss. And I think one thing that I've noticed, because the reaction's been very different. I mean, even if you aren't a royalist, you have to look at it from a human perspective. You know, for the Queen, especially losing a partner of, is it 72, 73 years of marriage, if I'm not mistaken? If you look at that from a human perspective, it's devastating. And I think, you know, he stood for a lot. He stood for Britain, he fought for Britain, he stood for what the royal family stands for, he had that wit and that sort of fun about him that he brought to royal engagements. So it is a sad loss, and it's sad to see, you know, the change it's made in the royal family. And of course it will, even from a family perspective, if you ignore that it's an establishment. So yeah, it is a sad loss, I think, but it's been interesting to see the different reactions, mainly throughout generations. I've noticed people my age seem to be a bit less sympathetic, but the way I see it is, as I said, we're all human and it's a loss, and I just think that's the only way I can see it personally.
Okay, let's move on to Yaz de Graaf. Yaz, your own thoughts on Prince Philip and, of course, the news which broke recently?
As a non, I didn't know much about the royals besides, you know, whoever's like in the media, straightforward. So Prince Philip wasn't one of those things that I kind of, all I see is him on Twitter, you know, looking all banged up in a car. And that's all I've been getting for the past few months or year I've been out here. And so, but as Rebecca said, from a human standpoint, a loss is a loss. And it is unfortunate to lose someone like that as she's going through, but I agree with our generation being not sympathetic.
As I say, yeah. Without being flippant about the whole thing, we will never really know the answer to the question. Would Her Majesty have actually provided him with a telegram for his 100th birthday? Let's move to Kira Olsbrook. Kira, your own thoughts on the sad news?
Well, to be honest, I think it's a great loss, you know, to the monarchy, to the crown, especially to the Queen. At the end of the day, she's lost her rock. You know, like Rebecca said, we're all human. It's a really sad time. At the end of the day, they were married for a very, very long time. Is it 73 years, 72 years? And, you know, at the end of the day, he's been her consort for all of that time. You know, he's just been her life. And, you know, she's lost it. And she, you know, at the end of the day, for all the charity work he did, you know, I think it's just a really, really sad time.
Well, certainly an awful lot of students who did and benefited from the Duke of Edinburgh Award, of course, crossed through the stations, both Siren and indeed Southside Broadcasting. Sebastian, again, as another member of the younger team for this one, any thoughts from yourself?
Well, I echo a lot of what Rebecca and Kira have said. I think it's sad for Elizabeth to have lost her husband of, seven decades. So I think, yeah, it's a very human sort of tragedy, definitely. I'm not very clued in with the royal family. Obviously, I know there's definitely generational things, like a lot of people my age today aren't very big royalists or, you know, monarchists and things. But yeah, I do think it is a sad loss, and I think he's going to leave behind perhaps quite a complicated legacy as things go on.
A complicated legacy. Robin, as somebody who's a different generation, more generation of Richard and myself, basically, your own thoughts on this change of an era, changing of the guard, perhaps?
Well, absolutely. As long as I've been alive, which is 61 years, he has been a fat part of the fabric of British life. And it's a sad passing of the old guard. And I've just got the feeling that things will never be quite the same again. And whether you're a royalist or a Republican, you can't help but feel, you know, okay, so where do we go from here? Because whether you like them or whether you don't, the royal family are a constant if you're living in the United Kingdom, whether it be Scotland, Wales, England, or indeed Ireland. They are a constant. And something that I've grown up with for 61 years has suddenly, you know, gone. It's an odd feeling. And I'm intensely curious to get Richard's view on where do we go from here and how can we manage, you know, what I presume will be some kind of major state funeral under these circumstances, because all of this has got to be absolutely unprecedented. And they can't have really planned for this to happen under these circumstances, however well they plan these things.
Well, Richard, obviously, we're delighted that you're able to join us. And it's the huge number of media aspects you've been doing for stations across the globe, including BBC London, all the usual suspects and so on. You've had a listen there. You've heard from different generations. You've heard, obviously, from Bermuda, from our own students here at the University of Lincoln, and a selection of that point of view. You've heard Robin's viewpoint. Does that kind of encapsulate the kind of feeling that's coming through? And again, just responding to Robin's question there, we live in very interesting times.
Yes, indeed. Just to deal with some of the points, if I may. I mean, firstly, for me, obviously, he's been, as with Robin, a constant for all my life. And indeed, I mean, absolutely extraordinary. One thing I would emphasize that, and I would urge you all just to give it some thought, it's perfectly true that he was a member of the royal family. He was his father was Prince Andrew of Greece. His uncle abdicated as King of Greece. His grandfather was assassinated as King of Greece, and so forth. There's no question that when at under 2 years old, he went into exile owing to his father's disastrous handling of the Greco-Turkish War of 1922. And that began a childhood which was tremendously tough. His mother was mentally ill. His father went finally to Monaco, where he was with his mistress. And for Prince Philip, there were schools in various countries, Cheam and Gordonston, to where he found it that it suited him, although not, as you will all remember, probably Prince Charles subsequently, because basically he was part of a previous generation which tended to take a view which we do not now, and I think that we should not. I do think that there is something to be said, obviously, as so far as Prince Philip's concerned, that, and Princess Anne was paying tribute to this, that you just took whatever was your lot and got on with it. These days, we take a very, very different view. He had a really tough childhood, but there was the one benefit, particularly that he had as an uncle, Lord Mountbatten of Burma, who was the most ambitious member of the royal family, or one of the most, and certainly a genius for PR. And he arranged the meeting between Prince Philip and Princess Elizabeth in 1939 at the Royal Naval College, Dartmouth, and the rest is history, because the princess had eyes for no one else subsequently. And this is one of the great royal romances in a way. It's lasted the marriage since 1947, 73 years, and certainly a fascinating, if you're interested in how opposites can not only manage so well together, but also publicly handle so many ceremonial activities so flawlessly. We've got so used to it, we don't comment on it. It's interesting that as Queen, I think Elizabeth has been rather cautious, rather shy, rather conservative by nature. Philip but contrast, dynamic, ebullient, challenging, and you've got the two mixed, so to speak, the elements mixed in them, as Shakespeare would say, and the combination I do think has been very beneficial. He saw his job. The last thing he would wish after having had such a successful period of service in the war and subsequent to that, having had his own command very briefly when based in Malta, he saw his career as in the Navy. In reality, it was two steps behind his wife. And these days, we look at these things in a very different way. Looking at it historically, that is the last thing he would have wanted, but he turned it to very, very good effect, because not only did he have an influence on the Queen and the fact that he was a person of absolute integrity and could always be trusted, but also the way he was attached to 837 organizations and institutions. If you want the original environmentalist, it was him. So far as the Duke of Edinburgh's award scheme, Alex, you mentioned that. I mean, I do think it's significant. Over 130 countries have benefited from it. And again, if you look at the way, as a sportsman, I mean, polo, subsequently carriage driving and making international rules for it, as a pilot. I mean, there was so much that he was able to do, including an artistic side few noticed, because he designed jewelry, painted and so on. So much publicity came from the so-called gaffes or ill-judged observations. I think that he used them to keep himself sane among all the ceremonial. But it is true that sometimes it did cause offence. And also he made mistakes sending Charles to Gordonston and to Cheam. That father and son have very different outlooks. But there's no doubt at all that although he could be abrasive, if you wanted to name a support for the Queen over all these decades, strength and stay, which is the tribute she paid to him after 50 years of marriage, I think applied very well. As for Robin's point as to where things go now, yes, it's absolutely right. No such, so far as the funeral was concerned, he never wanted a state funeral. He didn't want busts, although he was always someone who was, he was a man of action. Essentially, so you can just imagine with all these hospitalizations in recent years, he was a very impatient patient. The problem now is how you arrange or organize something other than flags at half mast, gun salutes, a period of national mourning, and so forth, when clearly a lot of people would wish to pay their respects and they're being urged not to do so because of COVID, and also obviously. Instead of 800 in St. George's Chapel, Windsor, where the Queen is in residence and where the funeral will take place, there will be, by law, some 30. So this really does present challenges, and my hope is that after this period, some form of celebration that, you know, those who feel inclined to will join in, will be arranged. As far as the younger, the gap between the old, the middle-aged, and the young, I do think most people would pay tribute to the fact that he's been such a successful and dedicated public servant, even if he's often put his foot in it. He called it dontopedology, the art of opening your mouth and putting your foot in it, and that got a lot of publicity. But I do think that is something. And also he's used his energy, not only for his own benefit, the benefit of the monarchy and the Queen, but also to help others. So I would urge you to think of somebody from a completely different generation, because he would have been 100 on the 10th of June, in a kindly way overall, because he contributed a lot to British society, and he was also the great support, as we know, to the Queen.
My only encounter with Prince Philip, of course, was when he was carriage driving, actually, in Cumbria around about 14 or 15 years ago. So it would have been mid-80s, etc. And it was quite interesting. At the time, I was having to go down a fairly large, steep incline to the natural valley. And my biggest concern was not actually going head over heels in terms of this, whilst keeping the recorder going as well. But we did do interviews with some of the competitors there. And it was remarkable how positive his team, who actually obviously prepared the courses and did all the rest of the areas, were about him. And also, I say, I found him, I mean, I didn't actually exchange any words from the point of view, but it's quite interesting in terms of he was clearly engaged with that action aspect, and of course would continue to take part in carriage driving, and indeed real driving, for a considerable period of time, proving to be, I would just say, an inspiration to people who are becoming more chronologically gifted. The fact that there was an awful lot of activity in, to use the cliche, what is very much a life well lived.
Let's in fact, I think it was 2 years ago. It's just extraordinary, because that throws you, I mean, you'll agree, Alex, it's a very rough and tough sport. So
it's not easy. And I speak as somebody who's not the best sort of friend of horses, etc. Just if I can stay on its horseback for a wee while, that's all I can actually hope for. And actually having to coordinate them and teams of four and six is phenomenal. However, let's open it up a little bit more. I mean, we've been listening to some of our thoughts there. Robin, I mean, you, obviously somebody who's been around for the whole time. Do you have any memories you'd like to share with us about Prince Philip or any encounters, obviously, in your work within the civil service?
Actually, I had no encounters whatsoever. I've only ever seen the gentleman on television. And that was it, really. Right. The investiture of Prince Charles as Prince of Wales in 1969 was several decades before I would wander those very turrets as a custodian.
Yeah. Rebecca, turning to yourself, I mean, obviously, the impression that we've all had in terms of through the media, through the forms, and it's just the BBC have also said that, you know, they're looking at the whole picture and some of his more controversial moments and so on. Any thoughts you'd like to add?
I think, I mean, some things are inexcusable. I'm not justifying any, you know, comments that are offensive, but I think we all make mistakes. I think the big thing we need to remember is, you know, I think as Richard said, he's from a completely different generation. Again, not justifying any comments, but he is from a different generation. There are some controversial things that as time has gone on, it's become, you know, less acceptable to be expressive of. I just wanted to add that I think 99 years as well, that really is to be celebrated. I mean, what a great expanse of life. And I think to have had that much time and to have been so influential and for the better as well, you know, he really pushed for a better Britain, especially after the war, you know, industrial design and education. He gave more than 5,000 speeches. I think he was really pushing for, you know, society to improve. So I think that is a real credit to him and to the British royal family. But yeah, I think it's difficult to comment on some of the things that obviously have changed as time has gone on. But again, I'm just still looking at it from that human standpoint. And it's a sad loss for a family and for Britain, I suppose. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, so we're sharing this with a number of students from the University of Lincoln. And of course, Queen Elizabeth laid the foundation stone to the University of Lincoln back in 1997, when it was, it still remains, I think, Britain's newest university from that point of view. Let's turn once more to Sebastian. Any thoughts or indeed questions for Richard that you'd like to raise at this moment?
No real extra thoughts as such, but yeah, like Rebecca said, reaching 99, I think it would have been quite tremendous to see him reach 100. I think that would have been quite a glorious event in a way. It would have been, you know, quite something definitely to be celebrated. But, you know, 99 is still a great life in terms of length for sure. And yeah, and he definitely, he didn't sit about doing nothing at least. So he's got a lot to be remembered for, I think. But yeah, like I say, I'm not especially up to date with the royal family or know that much about them. But yeah, I can recognise it as a sad loss for the identity of Britain.
Absolutely. Yaz, again, as somebody who, as we mentioned, clearly most of your experiences through the social media and aspects within that, and as well as one of our top public relations undergraduates at the University of Lincoln, what are your own thoughts in terms of the things that have been said? Or indeed, have you got any questions you'd like to put to Richard vis-a-vis scenarios such as, is Prince Harry going to come over? What's going to happen? Et cetera, et cetera.
I would say I did get a lot more of his history and his things that he's done. But yeah, I think it's something I was still taking over time to analyze.
Mm, that's a fair point. And Kira, from your own perspective, again, allowing for that historical description, which I think a lot of people forget just what a tough childhood he actually had in so many ways. There is this notion that, oh, you're a royal, you've got the silver spoon in your mouth, you never had to worry in any way, shape or form. This was clearly not the case with Philip. Any thoughts you'd like to add, Kira?
I mean, like you say, yes, he did have a really, you know, quite a tough upbringing compared to most children. But what actually fascinates me is how it did take him a while, but eventually, you know, he adapted to supporting his wife and not trying to overrule her and things like that. And, you know, I feel like that's really significant and, you know, that's something to be proud of along with all the work that he's done. And yes, he did, you know, make some derogatory comments over the years and things like that that not everybody agreed with. But at the end of the day, we're all human. You know, we all make mistakes. And I think we should just celebrate for the identity that he is giving Britain and, you know, for the reputation that he's given to the crown. And I just feel like, he did the world a good, really, and I hope he rests in peace now.
A time not to mourn, but to celebrate, Richard. That seems to be the theme that's coming across from this perspective. Would you say that that's certainly something we should take on board and indeed address as indeed we move forward? I mentioned, obviously, there will inevitably be some kind of fallout with respect to one of the grandchildren, shall we say, who's currently based in America, who many folk have actually said, indeed, you alluded to yourself, that the interview with Oprah would have been pulled had this sad news occurred a few weeks ago. Any other thoughts you'd like to raise, or indeed reflections on what you've heard so far?
Yes, certainly. I think, just to take the point, I do wish he'd made 100. Yes, it would have been. He would indeed have got a telegram, I think. But my goodness, it would have been one of those. You know, he'd already broken the record of being the longest consul. But he, as the point was also made, that he, as Rebecca was saying, I mean, he did a lot. And Kira also made this point. I mean, the point was it wasn't a question of you know, doing nothing. And that was an option. Prince George of Denmark, who was the consort of Queen Anne and no one's ever heard of, and he didn't feature in the film The Favourite, wasn't even mentioned. He didn't do a thing. Prince Albert, indeed, yes, but Prince Albert, the time the monarchy had executive power of a sort, sat in on meetings with ministers with the Queen held and saw papers. Philip had nothing like that at all. And creating his own role, it was a remarkable achievement. The energy side of it, I find just absolutely staggering, because writing books, doing designs, and also the numbers of things he was involved in, engineering, anything technological and so forth, and also the award scheme, as we've mentioned. I do think that it's certainly the end of an era to a certain extent. Queen 95, shortly, obviously, I suppose I've been asked, will she continue? Of course she will. I think that there's absolutely no doubt. If you saw the three broadcasts last year, I think they were unifying. I think particularly the one where she quoted Dame Vera Lynn when the pandemic had struck and the country was certainly morally with the Prime Minister, and also Prince Charles had been affected. There was no question that it needed a morale boost, and the monarchy does provide this at important times. I think it was important the Queen, for example, told everyone to have the jab effectively this year. And I do think, therefore, there's a very, very significant role so long as, obviously, from a health point of view, she's able to continue with experiences absolutely unique. So, so far as Prince Philip's concerned, might I suggest that, you know, it is a previous generation. There's no question that so many of the values that he had and attitudes were formed, the war and so forth, and a very dangerous family background, as I mentioned. So if you see articles that, you know, that happen to appeal about quirky aspects of his personality, do read them, because it is absolutely fascinating. And I think he was. I did meet him on a couple of occasions, and once fleetingly at Buckingham Palace, and he was just very pleasant and very jovial. He could be very acerbic, and the quotes that everybody knows, I think, were his way of letting off steam. The main thing was that he had the ear of the Queen. She knew she could totally rely on him. And as he once said of her, she has tolerance in abundance. And I think listening to him, certainly most of the time, was tremendously significant, because the monarchy we have is, for better or worse, the world's most high profile. I say that because, of course, when something like the Oprah interview, and Alex, you referred to Prince Harry, who doubted to be coming over for the funeral, COVID restrictions permitting, well, nothing gets publicity as much as a jubilee or a wedding that's a success. Nothing gets publicity so much as a disaster, like in the 1990s with the marriage of Charles and Diana collapsing, or Andrew's cataclysmic interview, or indeed the Oprah interview. So, you know, there are problems to be resolved. Hopefully, the funeral might be the beginning of some sort of reconciliation between the Sussexes and the rest of the royal family. The Duke, who devoted his life to supporting the monarchy, would certainly, I think, have approved of that.
Well, indeed, certainly that whole notion of a life to be celebrated and transcendence has occurred. I think for the closing moments of this little tribute that we've put together from the Midweek Drive team for, obviously, our Siren Radio listener and more, I'd like to just turn to Kira. I mean, I think you kind of summed it up in so many ways. I mean, your thoughts as part of the new generation in many ways. Any sort of closing ideas or thoughts you'd like to share with us at present?
At the moment, I think it's more when you brought up about Harry and Meghan. And I know it's just because at the moment, you know, they've been in the news for quite a long time now. And obviously, you know, with the damages that they've kind of done, you know, to the royal family and things like that. But we'll never know this. And we'll never know what obviously goes on inside, you know, if they have a wake and things like that. But I just think the next part, I hope that, you know, it does reconcile, and, you know, they're going to have a steady pace of hopefully no more crises evolving and things like that. But it's a family, and families have, you know, happy times and they have bad times, and they're just like any other family, really, at the end of the day. So we've just got to hope it keeps sailing along and nothing bad happens.
And HMS Bubble will continue to emerge as well. I think that's a wonderful summation of the whole piece, which I thank you, Kira Alsbrook, and Rebecca Bond, and Sebastian Mann, and Jes de Graaf, of course. And of course, Robin Pearce, thank you for taking part from the Principality in Wales. And Richard, inevitably an absolute delight connecting with the good self. I mean, just share with us, can you, your schedule in terms of going through the rounds? Because I know over the last few years, there's always been that stance whenever there's been a kind of question mark with respect to the health of the Duke of Edinburgh, that you've always had to say, we might be on standby for this. So was it a case of rather like one of the Duke of Edinburgh's well-worn plans or strategies that you might have adopted in the Navy, everything clicked into shape? Or how have you found the last 24 hours or so?
It was absolutely frenetic. Roughly midday, I got an email from Buckingham Palace. And I mean, my intention was to leave this room and get upstairs, change into a suit and black tie, and come downstairs. It was easier said than done. I mean, it really, one of the things, anything like any breaking news story in any way, but I mean, it is an absolute media firestorm, especially when you've got to negotiate London time, which is different from GMT by an hour, And then whatever that is in the Antipodes or Latin America or Canada or whatever it is, if you don't bear that in mind, you'll find very soon in a lot of trouble. So you keep your lists and try and make sure. My writing's terrible at the best of times, but you must make it legible, at least so far as I'm concerned. So yes, I mean, I did that recently. There was obviously, when he was in hospital, this was a possibility because of his age particularly, but obviously, one had so hoped he'd made his centenary. Sadly, that was not to be, but what a life.
Absolutely. And at least you managed to answer that question, which was bemusing me, really. Would he have received a telegram had he made the 100? It was just a thought, really. And doubtless he would have. Once again, Richard Fitzwilliam, Sebastian Mann, Robin Pierce, Rebecca Bond, Yaz de Graaf and Kira Osbrook. Huge thanks. We'll, I'm sure, be back again. Stay well, stay safe. And as I'm sure Prince Philip would actually have said, remember him for the good times.